This is episode 004 with Aaron Sampson.
Obviously, hosting retreats, big leap of faith. And, you know, the first one that we tried, like, I didn't have anyone sign up. So, you know, it's like that patience and persistence and like, okay, this isn't gonna break my ego or, you know, break me. So I think that was a huge turning point too, was my first retreat that I ever tried to get going. Like, nothing came of it. And I was like, well, I guess I'll try again. And it was worth it, you know, it was worth it. So yeah.
Welcome to the Behind the Fitness podcast, where we interview the world's most motivating and successful fitness trainers, instructors, and coaches to inspire people to be their very best every day. Thanks for joining me today. I'm your host, Ted James. Let's get going. Our guest guides hundreds of thousands of yogis with classes that she produces from studios in Colorado, Costa Rica, and Nicaragua. She's been a certified yoga teacher since 2008 and hosts major getaway yoga retreats. She's also the co-founder of Warrior Girls, yoga camps for girls. I want to welcome Aaron Sampson, owner and creator of Five Parks Yoga. Today, we're really going to get to know Aaron and learn how she went from a small Colorado home yoga studio to Costa Rica to hosting major retreats and huge online audiences. But first, Aaron, before we dive into that, can you tell us something that you believe can make you successful in health or fitness that many people might disagree with?
Well, I hope that people wouldn't necessarily disagree with this, but one thing that I feel strongly about is when you get into, you know, health, wellness, fitness, diet, any like new routine, I think that it's very common to go all in and have so much enthusiasm, be so excited. And I think that that can lead to potential disappointment or frustration when you can't maintain that level of enthusiasm that you start out with and you're so passionate. And, you know, fitness instructors are such cheerleaders, you know, and they're like, yeah, let's go, let's do this. So I think my advice, having been in fitness for so long and being an instructor, is to, you know, take it with some moderation and not necessarily take it slow, but, you know that you're going to change with time. Things come up, your body changes, your mentality changes, your schedule changes, tons of things change. And to have like one vision of what that fitness regime or diet regime is going to be can limit you to feeling disappointed or frustrated and potentially like giving up on a new, you know, fitness exercise, anything like new gym. Right. And so I would say for sure, like kind of moderation is key, because I know I was into CrossFit a long time ago and I loved it and I went all in. I was just so excited. Ended up with some injuries and, you know, and felt like I couldn't maintain the practice. And so I just was like, well, I don't want to do it anymore. So that's kind of my advice, or something that I hope a lot of people wouldn't necessarily disagree with. But yeah, being like a, you know, fitness leader and just being like, go, 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 and it's so exciting and whatever, like, you know, just know that you as a practitioner or you as a teacher, like, should be really clear about that, reasonable expectations, I guess. That's what I would say.
That makes sense. More about the long term. Can you sustain this for a long time?
Sustainability. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And having been an athlete my whole life and a yoga teacher for a long time, it's like things have changed over the years, you know, and I'm not the same athlete that I used to be or the same yogi that I used to be. And that is just, you know, a part of the longevity of sticking with something, is just knowing that and accepting that.
Right. So I giggled a little bit because I got into CrossFit years back, really heavy, and I hurt my back. And I was never into yoga before I hurt my back. And then I found yoga, and it helped so much. And honestly, it changed my whole fitness plan and the way I just plan my week. And I do yoga regularly now ever since then. Before that, I did not.
So you can think CrossFit.
I always struggled with flex. Exactly.
Bringing you into yoga.
And I did get away from CrossFit for a while, but I still do every once in a while do CrossFit.
Yeah.
But I do more yoga than CrossFit.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
And
CrossFit's great. So there's nothing wrong
CrossFit
with it.
For
but
it.
Yeah. I totally agree.
Right.
That was, I had so many, it's hardcore practice, and I felt like I was always getting injured, you know, not huge injuries, but like just minor things. Like my neck always hurt, my back always hurt, you know, and I was always sore, which was great because I was working out. But yoga is definitely, well, I mean, a lot of the yoga I teach and practice can be pretty hardcore, but it has a different kind of mentality around that, you know. Go. So
I think it was called Vigorous Vinyasa yesterday. And I fell down a lot, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
So it is challenging, but yes, in a different way.
Yeah,
sure.
In a different
and,
way.
No,
yeah.
Nothing wrong with CrossFit as long as it's you're doing the exercises safely and the right way.
Exactly.
And that's where I made a mistake, is I was pushing myself further than I should have that week.
Yeah.
And I was, the muscles I was supposed to be using were just too tired that week, and it put stress where on my spine, really, that it shouldn't have. And,
right.
So that's why rest days are also important.
Yes, absolutely. Moderation for sure.
All right. Yes. Well, can you give us a little bit more background on yourself, and then tell us what drove you to find your love for yoga in the beginning, before you even started being a yoga instructor?
Yes.
So what is your why behind what you do?
So my first, well, like I said, I've always been an athlete, been into sports, and have done a lot of different things along the way, but my first exposure to yoga was actually when I was in high school, and it was at a rec center. And at the time, I was a gymnast, which is crazy because I'm so tall, but I had a lot of injuries from gymnastics too. But you know, you can imagine the connection with gymnastics to yoga, because I loved the strength combined with flexibility. But I remember there was just this yoga class, and this is long before there were yoga studios and it was a popular practice. And I went, and I was just like, well, this is so silly. It's just stretching. Like, I stretch before and after I do any sort of workout. So I was just thought, and a lot of people have that stereotypical view of yoga, that it's just stretching, or that you need to be flexible to do yoga, which is, you know, you do yoga to gain more flexibility. So if you're not flexible already, don't be turned off to doing yoga, you know? So that was my first exposure to yoga, and it did not resonate with me. And so then fast forward, my brother lived in this really cool neighborhood in the Denver area. And there was a brand new Ashtanga studio, which is a different style of yoga. And he, I can't believe he wanted to go or that I went with him, but he's like, let's go try this out. And I was like, all right. And that, I don't know if you've ever practiced Ashtanga, but it's a very intense practice. And it was so hard, and I was so humbled, and the studio was so hot. And I was like, well, I don't really like that. So fast forward. And then eventually a friend invited me to a Bikram class, which is also quite intense and very hot. And then that, so it's the guy in those studios, it's not called that anymore, but you can go to, you know, any big yoga studio and do, it's like hot yoga. So it's a set series of poses. It's very intense. But it's more static. And that class, humbling again, but it resonated with me and like changed me. And I was completely hooked and I loved it so much. So that was my first like yoga love, but I just practiced that one specific style of yoga. And this actually is like a good, just, you know, food for thought. If you're getting into yoga or if you haven't practiced yoga, there's so many styles. There are so many different types of practices. So yeah, the neighborhood that I live in Colorado is related to my name. It's called the Village of Five Parks. And so that's why I named my studio Five Parks Yoga. But they opened a yoga studio in the neighborhood and it was, you know, Hatha, so pretty general variety of yoga. And I went a couple times and I was like, oh, this is all right. It's not as intense as what I've been used to. But they started yoga teacher training and I am trained as a teacher. I'm certified as a teacher. My degree in college is psychology and English, and I got a teaching certification. So those were my passions. And I really wanted to teach. And I, you know, thought for years about teaching outdoor education, you know, something alternative that had a physical connection to it. And I was like, I think I might just combine like my passion for the physical practice of yoga with my passion for teaching. And
all right.
And that was kind of how I started. But yeah, the teacher training was amazing because what I really learned was that yoga is not just a physical practice. And I think that's why I love it. You know, it's mental, philosophical, psychological, spiritual, all of the things that make it so much more than just a workout. And there are types of yoga practices that you can go to where you just get a workout, you know, just a yoga sculpt class and, you know, work out your body, and that's great. But I like the other aspects of yoga that when I went to my teacher training, I was like completely sold on wanting it to be my profession. And so that's kind of how I started with yoga.
Okay. Are there still certain styles of yoga that you really like more than others, or have you kind of grown to like just love all of them?
No, 100%. I love vinyasa. It's what I probably teach the most online. It's why I love vinyasa. It's super creative. Every single time you practice a class or every single time I teach a class, it's, you know, you don't really know what you're in for, and you can make it as unique to your style as you want. And I just think it's a really great practice. It's pretty physically intense. But yeah, for sure, I would say that vinyasa is my favorite style, but just, it falls under the Hatha umbrella, but it's like the specific lots of breath movement. And it really brings in the breathing practice, pranayama, which is another thing that I love about yoga, is learning the breathing and how to regulate it and, you know, how to combine it with your practice. And then you can take that into your real, you know, your day-to-day life. And, you know, like just breathe isn't as trite as it sounds if you're really practicing it. my Apple Watch tells me all the time, just breathe. And I'm like, okay, I get it.
Nice. Okay. Well, let's move into your yoga instructor journey. Can you tell us more about your yoga instructor journey and your journey from when you started in your house in Colorado and from then to now you're hosting major retreats and serving huge online audiences?
So after I got my teaching certification at the studio I was talking about that was in my neighborhood, I started teaching there and, you know, had your average sized classes and, you know, some people who were continuously practicing with me. And then that yoga studio moved. It moved out of the neighborhood. It didn't shut down, but it, you know, it was gone. Mm-hmm. And at the time, we were remodeling our basement or finishing our basement. Our basement was unfinished. And I was like, maybe we should just put in a yoga floor, just, you know, just in case. And so we did. Mm-hmm. And then the yoga studio moved. And I was like, oh, maybe I should start teaching some classes here. So it started really homegrown. Like, so there were a couple people that I'd been practicing with that continued to come to my classes, and it grew a little bit, but it was very, you know, very humble beginnings. And when
how many people would you say?
I would say that I was teaching, you know, 2 to 3 classes per day, and they averaged between 2 and 10. So my studio could never hold more than 12 people. So it was pretty good. And you know, one kind of side note piece of advice is it was really nice to start small and with no overhead, because opening up a studio with all that overhead, if you don't have a lot of people who, you know, are your students, can be pretty tricky. So when I, you know, would have 2 students show up to class, or even just the modest, you know, 10, I wasn't worried about paying the bills. So that was like a big benefit to starting. So it wasn't very stressful in that way. And then when we decided to move to Costa Rica, that's a whole different story, but we were planning on just coming for a 6-month stint, and that was it. And we were going to move back to Colorado. And long story short, we've been here for 10 years now. So, but at the time,
can you tell us what made you do? I mean, 6 months it's not a week long vacation.
Exactly.
What made you decide 6 months in Costa Rica?
So, I have 3 kids. They are now, it's 18, 17, and 15. When we came, I mean, my daughter was 5. So my kids were like old enough, but young enough to, really do, you know, kind of a different experience. My husband works online, you know, I was teaching, which we ended up figuring out, and we were like, I just want them to have a different experience. So, you know, just a temporary experience that was more than a vacation, you know? So we moved down here, and, we enrolled in surf school and Spanish school, and just, the kids did kind of like online. It wasn't online at the time, but it was like their teachers sent them with work, and it was all fine. And we just loved it so much. And, we were like, we can't not come back. Like, I don't even know if we'll remember this experience. And so we ended up buying a home down here that is a rental property. So when we're not here, we rent it, which is why we don't live down here, so we can keep the house. So,
gotcha. Yeah. Second income.
So, so when we left for Costa Rica, you know, my students, again, small group of students, they were like, what about yoga? And I was like, well, I'll be back. But I was like, maybe we could just, you know, record some classes, and, you know, you guys can watch them and follow along with what I'm doing. And so it was pretty homegrown. So before we left Colorado, we did a test, you know, recording. It's actually my first ever published YouTube class from way back when. And that was just recorded in my basement with my students. And I wasn't teaching to the camera. I wasn't on YouTube. I didn't have an online following. So it wasn't as intimidating as it is now, you know, knowing that people are watching and following and the whole thing. So I was just like, oh, I was just teaching to my students. So we're like, oh, well, that's cool. So we figured out that YouTube, in my opinion, and our research, was the best like format for sharing the videos easily with no cost to us and all of that. So we just put, you know, classes up there for my students in Colorado. And funny enough, I don't think any of them ever watched any of the classes, but we started getting like, you know, a couple people like following and people that I didn't know. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. And so at that point we were like, well, maybe we should take this a little more seriously. And so I stopped teaching. I was teaching in-person classes here in Costa Rica at my home, just like I was in Colorado. So 5 to 10 people. And I was recording those classes. And I was like, oh, it's so hard to teach to the camera, teach to the students. I need to kind of pick one or the other. So I just started teaching online so I could teach to the camera and whatever. And so we started taking it a lot more seriously and, you know, made an effort, and then it started to grow. And with the growth of the channel, it allowed me to do retreats and, you know, it just kind of took on a life of its own in the beginning that we weren't anticipating. So, yeah, so it was a pretty exciting journey that we weren't really planning on in the beginning. It happened very organically, and it's been That's amazing. Great. And it has, having a larger online audience has allowed me to do the big retreats, which allow me to teach in person. Mm. And I love that because
I'm sure.
Yeah. Because I get to meet all the people who practice with me online. Not all the people, but the people who come, they practice with me online that I don't know them. And I get to spend like this intense time with them. And then I get to do all the other things that you do in-person classes. Like I get to give adjustments and we get to, you know, do meditations and more than just teaching an online yoga class. So I've really, really liked that aspect of combining the two.
All right. It seems like your lifestyle and how you are is kind of adventurous. I mean, not very many people are going to say, you know, let's go live in Costa Rica for 6 months. So it makes sense that you would be where you're at now because of just the people that you are, who your family is.
Right.
It sounds like being adventurous, being like, you know, let's try. We could do a yoga studio in our house. Why not? Let's do classes. Oh,
right.
You know what? Let's go to Costa Rica for 6 months.
Right.
You know, it's just kind of going with the flow, but at the same time, really taking the step sometimes. I mean, I know you said you're going with the, it sounded like you were saying you're going with the flow, but at the same time, you see an opportunity and you went for it.
Right.
Which is great.
Yeah. And, you know, you had asked just kind of that, those moments of fear, leaps of faith. I mean, I just told that story pretty quickly and casually, but I mean, oh my gosh, there were so many things that I mean, part of what attracts me to yoga is I, you know, have some anxiety and yoga really helps me with that. So all of these things that I've done, all of these moments that things shifted, were definitely leaps of faith. And I would say the biggest leap of faith was when YouTube started getting, when my audience started getting bigger, I did not have comments at the beginning. And I was just like, I never, ever, ever, because social media is like so nasty, you know, can be, not always, but it can be.
Right.
And people started saying like, I really want to be able to comment on your videos, which is an important part of like having a good, successful YouTube channel. But I would say that was the biggest,
right,
like leap of faith was to say, okay. Because to me, that moment was like, all right, we're doing this. We're all in. We're going to start marketing and, you know, allowing this to grow. And I don't know. That doesn't sound like a big deal, but for me, that was a big deal.
It is. I mean, you're putting yourself fully out there for the world just to... You know, the internet, they cut you down.
Exactly.
People on the other side. Yeah. I mean, it can be brutal.
Yeah, it can be brutal.
And I mean, you're putting your whole authentic self out there.
Exactly.
And you spent so much time on it.
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, years.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, all right, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
So I can see how that can be nerve wracking.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that the one other thing that was obviously hosting retreats, big leap of faith. And, you know, the first one that we tried, like I didn't have anyone sign up. So, you know, it's like that patience and persistence and like, okay, this isn't going to break my ego or, you know, break me. So I think that was a huge turning point too. Was my first retreat that I ever tried to get going, like nothing came of it. And I was like, well, I guess I'll try again. And it was worth it, you know, it was worth it. So yeah.
Nice. Yeah. And I think out of all the people that I talk to who are successful, so many of them have those failures at the beginning, and which I mean can be with anything, with anybody,
of course,
but they're like, yep, it didn't work out at all at first, and I was really grinding and struggling, but then I just kept going because it's what I felt like I was called to do and I wanted to do.
Exactly. Yeah.
I wanted to circle back a little bit. You talked about earlier the mental and spiritual aspects of yoga that really you loved it, especially when you started teaching and learning more about it, and how also now you mentioned that it helps with anxiety. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more about that and just in how you love that side of yoga and how it helps you out personally?
Yeah. So yeah, like I was saying, when I took my first teacher training, I'd been practicing this one specific style of yoga and I didn't know anything about the practice. And so my mind was blown, like the philosophy, and, you know, obviously there's that mental psychological piece, but I think the things that affected me the most were the practices, because they were hard for me, of pranayama, of breathing, and meditation. And one of the reasons that I love vinyasa is because I truly believe meditation doesn't have to be this kind of stereotypical view of someone seated perfectly straight, you know, with their hands in Gyan Mudra, like oming, you know. So I feel like yoga, the physical practice for me, is like a moving meditation. So it kind of gets me out of my head and into my body and into my breath, and it kind of brings all of that together. And then one of the things that's so unique about the practice of yoga that's different than other endeavors is Shavasana at the end. And, you know, whether or not it's an intense physical practice that you just did, just taking the time afterwards to lie down in stillness and in quiet and just like kind of let it like soak in and integrate into your body. Again, it was hard for me in the beginning to sit through Shavasana and do that. And because it was hard, it had the most impact on me. And, you know, I feel like in those moments, you can have just an awakening in your body, which affects your brain, which affects your body. So it's just a really, yoga is just amazing. It's such, I mean, it's union of all of those things of breath and body and mind and spirit. And
I would say I definitely struggle with that still too. It's just opposite of really culture today.
Exactly.
Which is always fast moving and so very helpful.
Yeah. It is really just the opportunity, even, you know, within hopefully any yoga class you ever attend, they will do that, you know. Breathing in the beginning, focusing, centering, and Shavasana at the end, hopefully in any yoga class you ever attend. But for our busy lives and the way that we tend to live, it could be the only opportunity, you know? Even if you're, you know, you go to the gym and you're like, all right, and I've got, you know, an hour to spare and you're in a hurry and you've got to leave. Well, if you go to a yoga class, at least for 5 minutes, you are, you know, for lack of a better word, forced to just stop. And that is so different than, well, and I love all other types of exercise too. So I'm not saying anything bad about other types of exercise, but it's different than going to the gym and just getting in your quick workout, and you towel off and get in your car and you rush home because, you don't, I mean, you're not going to like sit in the middle of the gym and lay down, take a moment of stillness, take a moment of peace.
Usually not.
Usually not.
You never know.
So yoga is really unique that way. And I love it so much because those things were hard for me. Well, they still are, you know, it's hard. I think it's sometimes for a lot of people, it's the hardest part of the practice is, not the physical piece. It's not about getting your leg around your head, but it's about lying down and stopping for 5 minutes and just sitting there listening to your breath.
Right.
And, you know, trying to, you know, and meditation doesn't have to be this like, you know, oh, your mind is clear. And it's like, you know, I'm just floating on clouds. It's just being there in it and like observing, being an observer of your own physical state, your mental state, your spiritual state. And, you know, a good yoga practice allows the space and the time for those things, in my opinion.
I agree. For me, it's a lot about balance. One day I'll lift and it is the opposite mindset for me than yoga is for me.
Right.
Usually. Sometimes yoga can be pretty challenging depending on what style of yoga.
Exactly.
But one day I'll be lifting and I'll have my music, you know, ripping as loud as it can go. And,
exactly.
And I'm like totally focused on that. And then the next day, and this is why I think balance is so good, especially, for not getting injured and just being all around balanced is, and then I'll do yoga, which is the opposite, and I'll have a totally different mindset and try to clear my mind a little bit more. And it's something that I really only got into probably about 3 or 4 years ago. And now I mean, I don't think I'll ever go back to not doing yoga, at least in some form throughout the week. In my practice. But
do you have a favorite style, or do you do all online, or do you go to the studio or the gym, or where do you practice?
Usually I practice right here, right behind me. So this room is actually, this side is a studio, for recording, and that side is my workout room. So kind of a larger room, but yeah, it's perfect. I spent a lot of time in here.
Yes, I bet you do.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I have a specific style of yoga. I mean, vinyasa is probably what I end up doing most.
Right.
It's very popular. So
yeah.
It
is very popular.
I tend to find myself there a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For me, I try to stretch, especially do some of the ones that have longer stretches, just in case I am sore. I'm pretty naturally unflexible. Mm-hmm. I think for the first 20 years of my life, I couldn't touch my toes.
Right. Yeah.
But so that's always a constant thing.
Yeah.
I like to run a lot, so my hamstrings get tight also. So
yeah.
Yoga helps a ton with that. So,
yeah.
So that's what helps me out and I think about the most. And I know it's not just about flexibility.
Right.
But that is definitely one thing that brings me to the mat.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. One practice that you should try, I don't have a ton of these on my channel, is yin, Y-I-N, yin yoga. And it is long holds, deep stretches. And I, you know, on my retreats, I teach all different styles. So people get exposed to, you know, lots of yoga, not just one type. And sometimes that can be one of the hardest practices because you think, you know, you might look at it and be like, oh, you're sitting there like stretching toward your toes. No, you're doing that for 5 to 7 minutes and it can be uncomfortable. And it is definitely a practice that you have to really be connected to your breathing. And when you want your body to open up and gain flexibility, those long, long holds are the way to go. So try a yin class.
Okay. All right. I have done some before, but yeah, I will definitely add it to my schedule next week.
Just try one out. Let me know what you think.
I'll let you know how it goes. All right. Well, I want to circle back to the business side of your yoga practice. And just for someone who's just starting out in the starting years and looking to grow their yoga or fitness business, like what advice would you have for them?
I know it sounds trite, but we've already talked about this, but patience and persistence, of course, not letting like the small things crush you immediately. And for me, I would say my biggest piece of advice is to, be authentic to who you are, because you can like look at other, and I do, you know, I'll be on YouTube. I've got people on YouTube, like other yoga instructors that I follow, and I'm always curious who's doing what and what's happening out in the world. It's important to my business to know those things. But, you know, when I watch other people's videos, for example, or even go to other people's classes, you know, in my mind, I often am like, oh, I should do more of that. I should be more of that. Oh, I should try more of that. And I have found over the years that the people who follow me on YouTube or come to my retreats, they come for like my particular style, my authentic way. And there are a lot of people, I'm sure, tons and tons and tons, who go to my channel and they watch my classes and they're like, not for me. And that's great. I don't need them. I don't need every single person out there. I don't need to fill all of those needs for everybody, because it's impossible, obviously. So I think being very, very authentic to who you are and following that versus trying to fit into a mold. And I don't know that everyone would agree with me on this, but doing a lot of you know, those online, you know, how to build your business really quick courses and, you know, marketing outside. Not that there's anything wrong with marketing or anything like that, but if you're just getting all of, you know, a bunch of subscribers that really didn't come to you from you, I would not recommend doing that. I feel like doing an authentic, organic growth is important, because that's how I did it, and it worked, but may not work for everyone. So, but that is something that has been very important to me, is not getting caught up in who I should be, who's doing what, and I should be more like them. You know, I just try to know that not everyone's going to like me, and not everyone's going to resonate with me, and that's fine, because that's life, you know?
Yeah, so many different kind of people out there, so.
Yeah. I feel like that's a piece of advice, like, you know, on a practical level, I feel like for me teaching yoga online and in person, it's been important to stay with both. I feel like if I were just teaching online, I would have lost that personal connection to my people.
Oh, right.
So that's just been important to me, which is why, you know, I continue to do my retreats and, you know, have that experience as well as being online, because being online can just be really isolating and lonely. Like, you don't, other than comments, you're like, I'm teaching to a camera. I don't know who's watching me. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, what's happening. But when you're with people, you know, live and you're doing it, you get that, that feedback of like, oh, what works and what doesn't. So, you know, as far as teaching online, that would be some advice that I would give, is to keep doing stuff in person as well.
And that totally makes sense. Because I think you can lose touch with what's working or what people resonate with if you're doing it just in front of a camera. But when you're doing it in front of people, I mean, I think a large amount of people know, especially after this past year or so with COVID, that being at home just in front of a computer, it can get isolating. But when you're in front of people, the communication is not just verbal. It's everything. It's how they react, you know, your facial reactions, your body reactions. And then you can see, is this instruction actually working for somebody who's right in front of me?
Exactly.
Well, it's not working great because all these people are doing the wrong thing.
Exactly.
Or something like that. You know?
Yeah. And, I mean, you're doing a podcast, and so you'll understand this, but another, like, just practical, technical piece of advice that we've learned, this is just in regards to online, the most important thing, because we've spent a lot of money on camera equipment and all that stuff because it matters, but sound, like, sound is everything, especially when you're teaching yoga, but probably other things too, because like you were talking about earlier, I mean, in yoga, half the time you're in a downward facing dog or a plank, and you're not looking at a screen, you don't know what's going on. So to have clear, concise, high quality sound. So we've spent more on our sound equipment than we have, well, not that we have on cameras, but we have prioritized having good quality sound. It matters so much. So that's just practical advice.
Yes, I think that's very true, especially these days, because there's so much competition out there. It's easy to be like,
yes,
you sound terrible, I'm going to the next thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I even think it's, I don't know, I feel like it's even more important than the visual for yoga, because you're not always looking at the screen. So if you can't hear and you don't know what's going on, it's just too annoying. You know, like, I can't follow along with everything. So I would say sound is really, really important if you're doing, you know, online stuff. And if you're teaching in person, sound is important too. Like your voice and your projection and all of that is so important. You have to be even, I mean, I get nervous, you know, some light just went out. but I try to continuously like project my voice and just stay steady in that. So I think that's important too. Because one thing that happens in yoga with a lot of yoga instructors is a very sing-songy kind of, I don't know if you've ever done a class like that, but it's just like, and breathe in and breathe out and breathe in and breathe out. And I think that that, you know, voice stuff can be really agitating and really irritating. So having some sort of steady, you know, really direct instruction is important.
Yes.
And I can't speak to other fitness instructors, but in yoga, I think it's really important to not be too sing-songy and, you know, I don't know.
No, I think it's important in any style of fitness. I mean, the more you can be direct and help out people in your class, the more successful they're going to be.
Yeah.
And I mean, the more successful they are, then everybody's successful.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Fantastic. Well, can you tell us about people in your journey that really inspired you? Mm-hmm. And can you give us a couple example stories and of how and when they inspired you?
Yeah. Well, I think it goes without saying that I've done two yoga teacher trainings. And so, of course, the teachers that I had really inspired me and changed my whole journey in yoga. So I think that it's super important, you know, when you've been, you know, on a journey for a while, that you keep going to people who can teach you something. So that's always been really important to me, different yoga teachers that I feel have something to offer me, something to teach me, that keeps me inspired. So I've done, you know, my two teacher trainings, but I've also done so many workshops and conferences and different things that keep me inspired along the path, because if I just were in it on my own, I, you know, you get stale, you just get flat. You're like just doing the same thing. Yes. So
burnt out.
Yeah. Burnt out. And then, my family, so my husband, Matt, he's the one who does all the filming and the editing and the uploading and all of that. He's the behind the scenes of all of this. So he's been really instrumental in helping my business grow, because, you know, I'm the person on screen doing the yoga, but without all of the background stuff, like the YouTube channel wouldn't exist. And he really helps with the logistics of my retreats and all of that. So I'm very thankful for that. And then my kids, all three of my kids, but my two oldest are collegiate swimmers. So they're very connected to their fitness and all of it. I mean, they're, you know, it's their whole life. It's everything. So they inspire me every single day, like knowing what they're doing. And as a matter of fact, my son Jacob, when we're not in Colorado, we've got like a little pool outside, but it's not a swimming pool. Like you take two strokes and you're at the other end. So he can't train while he's in Costa Rica. So he bought a tether for the pool. And I mean, he does like a full swim workout every single day, and he goes to the gym every single day, and he surfs every single day. And I don't know. It's funny to say that my kids are my inspiration, but because they're so athletic and they're so into their fitness, it's just such an inspiration to me. I'm like, oh my gosh, like it brings me back to, you know, moments of being inspired myself to to do more, to get better at something. And so, yeah.
No, that's great. I think a lot of people say the same thing about their kids, whether mm-hmm. it's their kids being athletic or
right.
My kids are 1 year old and 4 years old. Uh-huh. So they're not there yet with
right.
really doing athletic things, but
right.
at the same time, they inspire me to take care of myself
exactly.
and do yoga and
yeah.
everything else, because I want them to be able to be healthy in the future so they can become athletes like your children in the future.
Right. Right.
Do all these crazy surfing
yeah.
and yeah. pool workouts and everything else. Like I want yeah. them to like be inspired by me, and then
right.
And then in the future they can inspire me later.
Yeah.
Right now I just have Russell, my 4-year-old son. So that's
yeah.
the only inspiration I really have physically from him.
Yeah, it is pretty incredible. And I really do mean that. They are very inspiring to me in that way. And, you know, didn't really see that coming, but they mm. both got signed to college, and it's just incredible. Like
awesome.
Their commitment is unwavering. And I'm like, oh, like I look at them and I'm like, I want to be more like that. I'm inspired by them to, you know, continue pushing myself and striving to be better. And, you know, yoga is a little different than swimming fast times in the pool, but you understand what I'm saying, you know, that commitment is just growing and yeah.
Absolutely. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they get that commitment level from somewhere. So
maybe
somebody that's made a giant YouTube channel and done all these amazing things with yoga. That is exciting. It's kind of exciting for me to hear things like that. It just mm-hmm. like makes me excited about the future. Like,
exactly.
I don't want my kids to grow up too fast,
right,
but
right,
at the same time,
right.
It's always exciting to see what they're doing next.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible. Yeah. Yeah, we're celebrating our 10 years in Costa Rica this December. So it was 10 years ago that we came for the first time. So we've been looking back at pictures
All
and
right.
experiences and everything. And it is, I mean, it's like this blip of time. I'm like, Abby was 5 and she's getting her driver's license this year. So it's pretty cool to have those, you know, those moments to reflect upon, you know, your past. And to say it again, another thing that sounds trite is it goes by fast. So enjoy it.
That's what everybody tells me.
I know, it's so trite, but
I've tried to hold on. Yeah, it already does seem like it's going by fast.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Well, how do you continue to learn in order to stay on top of things in your role? And can you give us some particular examples?
So it's kind of some things that I've already addressed, but for me, continuing to practice, to learn. That's when I got my second teacher training, or my extended, it's like the 500 hour training. I was feeling a little bit flat. Like, I don't know, I need some inspiration. I need something else. So going to that training, it just,
okay.
it changed my teaching. It changed my mindset. It got me out of a rut. So, you know, education, super important. You know, and when there's like workshops or conferences or things that I am able to do, I think those have been helpful to, you know, maybe not just inspire me, but maybe get me out of a rut if I'm feeling a little stuck. And then mm-hmm. it is, well, I have a perfect example that's coming up is I'm actually attending my first retreat in January. I mean, I've hosted like, I don't even know how many I've hosted now, but I've never been to one. Never been on a yoga retreat.
Oh,
I know. So that is a great example of, I was like, I need something to, you know, inspire me and teach me. And, you know, yeah. I've hosted all of these retreats, and it's kind of good that I didn't have like a model of what it should be. So I've just created it out of what I thought was appropriate, but I am curious. Like, how do other people do it?
Yeah.
What is it like
right.
to be on a retreat? What is it like to be a student? You know, what is it like, mm-hmm. even just the logistics of doing it? So that is a
right.
perfect example of something that's coming up soon that I have to, it's a treat to get to go, but I have to remind myself to stay up on that stuff and not just get stuck. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, that would be nice for you going to that retreat.
It will be nice.
Just being able to relax.
Yeah. I'm excited. It's mm-hmm. In Mexico, and it's a place I've never been to,
okay.
but I'm very excited to check it out. And, you know, and also like I've only done, you know, retreats and all of this stuff in Costa Rica. So even to see a different place would be great.
Sure.
I've yet to even host a retreat in Colorado. I'm like, I need the perfect retreat center and I haven't found it yet. It's so easy in Costa Rica.
Okay.
They're everywhere. There's so many to choose
from. Oh, really?
From, so. Oh, yeah.
I might need to check that out one of these days.
It's a yoga happy place.
Is it?
All right. Oh, yeah.
I will have to make my way down there one of these days.
Oh yeah.
So you said that when you did your 500 hour certificate, mm-hmm. It changed your practice and it mm-hmm. changed the way you did mm-hmm. your classes. How did it change your classes?
So my first teacher training, my 200 hour was so good. I was given so much information. It was a very practical training, and I feel like made me a good teacher. Like I knew how to teach a class when I finished. Mm-hmm. My second teacher training was much more like emotional and not psychological, but you know, it was so personally, it was so personal. So it was like a personal journey. So I really, changed like who I was when I was teaching. And I already referenced this, but even the way I spoke during my classes, like I feel like I was in, if you look back at my old classes, like I was pretty fast. I don't feel like I was just as grounded as a teacher. And after my second teacher training, like if you could see just the first class after my second teacher training, you'd be like, oh yeah, she totally is like a different teacher. So I feel like that was the big change, was being more authentic to myself versus just teaching the postures and just going through the motions. And it was just more authentic. Yeah, I learned a lot about myself. Had that been my first training, I don't know that I would have learned as many like technical things. So it was a good combo of mm-hmm. the two experiences. So yeah, my second teacher training though was very intense. So that's partly why it like changed who I was. I was like, whoa, okay. So we're doing this like it was pretty intense. It was really good. Yeah.
Pushed you a little bit more than you thought you might.
Yep. Yep. Pushed me more emotionally than physically. So it was pretty cool.
Oh, okay. Okay. Great. Well, speaking of that, I asked this question to quite a few people. Mm-hmm. But what do you do when your mind tells you to stop, to not go get that yoga class in or not do the thing you know you need to do to better yourself?
Yeah, you had shared that question with me, and I've been thinking a lot about it recently because I'm kind of in, I'm dealing with a physical injury right now. I have a bunch of tears in my knee, so I haven't been filming.
Okay.
And that's been very challenging for me. So I was like, okay, I think that one thing that's very unique about yoga is there's this message in yoga of like, you know, don't push beyond what you should be doing. Take care of yourself. I say that every single class. I'm like, you do what works for you. And so there is a piece of me that's allowed myself to take this bit of time, you know, to deal with my injury. And I mean, I do something every single day, but so to answer the question, I would say what keeps me going is I feel so much better. And, you know, I'll just be like, oh my gosh, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to go to the gym. I don't want to do that class. I don't want to, you know, I don't run, but I walk, hike. And, you know, every single time I do, I'm like, oh, thank God I did. So that it's the memory of how I feel when I do it that keeps me going. So good experiences, endorphins, all that good stuff that happens when you do the things that you love and that get your blood moving. And, you know, and I like to do things outdoors. So like fresh air, it's like all the good stuff that keeps coming back for more, you know, but it's not easy all the time. I mean, there's so many barriers that come up and, you know, and I have a physical barrier currently, and it's been really challenging to not be able to do what I want to do right now, you know?
Yes. Injuries are challenging.
Injuries are challenging.
That is for
like
sure.
Forces you to stop, you know?
Yes. Usually more challenging mentally than physically.
Yeah, absolutely.
Than anything.
Yes, 100%.
And I agree, like the thought that I know I'm probably going to feel a lot better after I go work out or do whatever physical activity that I just don't feel like doing it. That helps me out a lot too, especially just thinking about how I felt like crap before. If I kind of get out of my cycle and I'm like, man, it's been a really busy week, and I just realized I haven't done any kind of workout or anything physically in a few days or more. And it's like this is why I feel like crap. And that's how people can get on downward spirals and cycles, and just getting that workout or that yoga session in today, it leads to tomorrow. Cause then you're going to remember, oh, I felt way better yesterday. And plus it helps you feel better tomorrow.
Exactly.
The next day. So
exactly. Yes.
I agree with
you
for sure.
Yeah. The memory of what it feels like to, you know, just memory day to day, like, oh, I felt so much better yesterday when I went for that nice 2-hour walk. Like that was like, oh, I felt so good afterwards. I should do that again today.
Usually the hardest part is just like putting on your shoes or rolling out the mat or something like that. That's always the hardest
part.
But once you start,
always the hardest
you're like,
part.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I did this.
Exactly.
I don't know why it took me a half an hour to finally come do this half an hour workout.
Exactly. I know, right?
It's so funny.
That's very typical though, I would say for most people. Most people have that struggle. It's the getting there. You know, and I always say that, you know, well, it's easy to retreat because it's expected, but like in a class, I'm like, the fact that you are here, like, boom, you made it. Like that's like half the battle that you, you know,
yes,
got here. So it is true. That it's half the battle. It's just making the decision to do it and motivating. Yeah.
Yes. Agreed. Well, can you share with us how we can connect with you? And then we're going to say goodbye.
Yeah. So I have a website. It's fiveparksyoga.com. My YouTube channel, these are all very easy. It's youtube.com/fiveparksyoga. I'm on Instagram, so instagram.com/fiveparksyoga. I'm on Facebook, so facebook.com/fiveparksyoga. And, and we didn't really talk about it, but my Warrior Girls yoga camps.
Oh, yeah.
I also have a website called warriorgirlsyoga.com. I think we probably didn't touch on that much because of the pandemic, for the last 2 years, I haven't taught a camp. So it's not like really, it's not fresh on my mind right now. So, but that's another part of my business that's really, really amazing. So, yeah.
YouTube. That caught my eye when I was looking at things earlier, and I thought that was pretty cool. It looked great. My daughter's 1 year old, but you know, she'll be in a blink of an eye, like you said, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I think that would be something that would be really cool for her to do in the future, is a camp like that.
Exactly. Yeah. It's cool. And especially like with yoga. I mean, it's like the combo of, you know, these girls, and I do it with, you know, kind of preteen age, you know, it's a hard time in life. Mm-hmm. So it's like we do the physical yoga, but we also teach, so I do it with a friend of mine. We teach so many other skills for them, like all the things that you get out of yoga, like learning how to breathe and be grounded and sit with uncomfortable moments and all of those things. And so, yeah, it is an incredible camp, in my opinion. It's my camp, but I think it's incredible.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
So
it's very cool. And is that in Colorado?
Yeah. Yep. That little yoga space downstairs is where I do it. Similar to your basement, though, I've got kind of like two halves. So I've got the yoga studio, the yoga floor on one side. And then the other side is where my kids play video games. But during camp, like we do all the yoga in the yoga studio, and then all the other stuff like on the other side of the basement. So it's nice because that's like we do, you know, just conversations, art projects, group stuff. So,
awesome. All right. Well, after the show, head over to behindthefitness.com. You'll find links to videos to each episode, links to connect with Erin, and more. And of course, be sure to check out Erin's enormous library of online yoga classes, yoga challenges, and if you are looking to get away, her Costa Rica yoga retreats. Erin, thank you so, so much for spending time with us and really letting us get to know you better. It was truly powerful.
Thank you, Ted. It was great to be on the podcast. Thank you for inviting me.